Hello, you are listening to award-winning Blunt Youth, the Blunt Youth Radio Show. We are going to be talking about geek culture in Maine. We will boldly go and answer the big questions like,
is the cake really a lie? And are you wearing the cheese or does the cheese wear you? And we'll try to find the answer to the ultimate question, life, the universe, and everything.
We have a shiny show for you. For all you folks, and we want to hear from our listeners, so tell us what you think about geek culture by calling 780-4909, that's 780-4909. And now, we are talking with Julie York and Ryan York, who are co-founders of the long-running PortCon Maine. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice.
Alright, so let's just... Yeah. PortCon happened recently, and we just want to ask, what does being a geek mean to you?
It means being dedicated to a hobby or various hobbies that are a little subculture, or I don't even know if it's pop culture today.
It's become pop culture.
It's become pop culture. And really enjoying yourself, really getting into something, whatever that something is.
You could talk forever about what makes someone a geek versus a nerd, and I'm not going to do that. But I like to think that a geek is someone who brings something constructive to a fandom.
Yeah. A little bit more constructive, a little bit more dedicated to whatever fandom it is that they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So when did PortCon start?
In 2002.
Cool.
2002. And how did it start off? Was it small, really small, or?
I basically, in college, I decided that I wanted a convention in Maine. So we ran a really, really small convention called the New England Anime Con at Farmington. That was like 20 people. It was pretty cool. And then in 2002, after graduating college, I was like, well, I want to keep doing that. And I can't afford to go to the bigger cons as often as I wish I could. So we started at USM across the street-ish at the campus community center. And we sold bookmarks to fundraise for that, and with 35 whole dollars in our pocket, we ran a convention for 200 people. It was pretty kicking.
Yeah, we started small, but we've doubled our attendance
doubled
for quite a few years in a row, and then plateaued out and continued to grow a couple hundred at a time from that point on.
Now, do you think because Maine is sort of a small state, at least population-wise, and because it has sort of smaller communities, that's helped bring like a close-knit sort of community, or everybody's involved and the word gets out and it gets bigger and bigger a little bit at a time?
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, we're not as, we don't have the facilities in Maine to necessarily support a lot of the bigger conventions that you see like in other states, like Comic-Con in San Diego. There's no way. I mean, there's just, that doesn't exist here. We don't have the population for it, so we really wouldn't. And it is, I think that's a really good way of putting it, actually. It's a small community, and I think a lot of people like to come out for it. And it's very close. Like, if you've ever been to other conventions, I don't know, have you, Olivia, been?
I actually haven't been to any other conventions. I want to go, though.
Okay. Have you been to PortCon?
Yes, I was okay. Last year and this previous PortCon 2013.
Yeah, so, me too.
Yeah, so if you've been to PortCon, you'll know that, like, you can see people in the hall, right? And you can stop and talk with them.
Yeah.
And if you're trying, you can meet a whole bunch of people there. And it's very easy to strike conversations, and it's very easy to find people who like what you like.
Yeah.
I'm not discounting bigger conventions, because I've been to quite a few, and I work over for Anime Boston every year. And bigger conventions are a little bit different in the atmosphere, and a little bit less about the smaller communities and a little bit more about the bigger guests and the huge vendor rooms and the bigger events, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ours is probably one of the only conventions where you might actually be able to talk to a guest just walking the halls. Most anywhere else, they're going to avoid the halls like it's the plague.
This year we had, I don't know if you knew, Chirami, and I'm probably saying her right. No, it's Jeremy with a Chirami. And she's a voice actress, and she came here, and she was like, this is a really different con. She's like, I've seen Maine. I've eaten lobster. She's like, I sat and talked with some of my fans, and we're like, yes, that's pretty much what we like to do.
But it clearly is getting bigger every year. It seemed very large this year.
It's a little busting at the seams.
Yeah.
We're
over 2,000.
2,500.
Yeah.
Yeah, we... we're thinking about getting a second tent. Like we're getting our techs a little concerned, but you know, if we need to become Tent Con to fit, we'll become Tent Con. And, you know, the mall works with us. The mall is very friendly, and the mall is very gracious to allow us to do things in the mall. Mm-hmm. So we might start doing more mall events.
I imagine it brings in people, because I know people who don't attend PortCon that go to the mall specifically on that weekend to see the cosplayers walk around as sort of just like a little parade for themselves.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's, I mean, you would know, but I don't think it's bad for them, really.
Really?
I mean, they get a lot of people to go buy food and stuff like that. So.
It's not bad for the local business, not at all. And a lot of businesses are starting to get involved because of that. Mm. You know, and we do a lot of fundraising. A lot of charities have contacted us to see if we'll fundraise for them. This year we did the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. We've done the Animal Refuge League before, American Cancer Society, things like that. And it's definitely, it's not bad. It's never bad for the local businesses.
No, you might get
a little bit of, people sometimes don't realize that perhaps going into a public place like the main mall with, you know, a prop sword isn't necessarily appropriate. So you might get a couple.
So there's a little culture shock going on there.
Yeah.
just
a little bit.
Just a smidge. Maybe the prop gun isn't appropriate for the mall.
But do you think that with larger conventions that they have, like, they're really talking to the people who are like, oh, we know that this is going on here, and like the talking to local businesses and talking to local charities. Do you think that happens as much? It seems like anything that happens in Maine, everybody knows everybody else, and you're always talking like to the person who is in charge, like you, because not everything isn't super big.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So, like, Anime Boston's, like, 15 or 16 or 17,000, right? And I've worked with them since the year that they started. So I was there when they were, like, I think they were, like, 4,000 their first year. Mm-hmm. And I've been with them straight through. When you get that big, it's harder to talk to, like, the person who runs it. Because, you know, it's huge. Mm-hmm. You can still do it. Like, there's still ways that I can communicate with them. Mm-hmm. And it's not impossible. And they still go out of their way to talk with the local community around them. Mm-hmm. I think conventions do that. Like, I think most conventions, I mean, I think when you get larger, you have, like, a PR team. And I think when you get larger, you have, like, a sponsorship liaison.
Yeah.
And our sponsorship liaison is usually, like, me. Or like, somebody who, you know, comes down to the store every now and then. Or, like, or like, you know, my mom or dad. Our sponsorship liaison.
So we have a piece... a feature done by Matt Osman and Iris Sangiovanni, and they talked to someone who works for Coast City Comics. And we'd like to play that piece and comment on it.
Melendez is not your average man. Some say he's the god of comic books, the master of pinball machines, and all things geeky. Jarrett Melendez is manager of Coast City Comics, a local comic book store in Portland, Maine.
Most people can probably guess that you sell comic books here. What other things can you find here?
You can find a lot of vintage 80s toys, old video games, Nintendo, Super Nintendo, that sort of stuff. We have a pinball arcade in the back, and, I mean, everything from G.I. Joe to Turtles to He-Man, all that sort of stuff.
What is your favorite comic?
My favorite comic right now is probably the Hawkeye comic by Matt Fraction and David Aja. So that comic is actually really cool because unlike most of the superhero comics, this actually deals with Clint Barton and his like everyday life. He actually never wears his Hawkeye uniform in it. He's just always kind of dressed in like a purple hoodie and purple chucks. And it's all of the nonsense that he gets involved in his everyday life, so he kind of can't help but being a superhero, even when he's trying not to be.
And I notice you're wearing purple chucks right now. Is that a conscious decision?
It absolutely is. Me and one of the other guys that used to work here, we both got them at the same time because we like Hawkeye so much. So we're definitely into it.
Do you like your job?
This is easily the best job I've ever had.
Our show is about geek culture. Do you consider yourself a geek?
Yeah, definitely. I actually wanted to work at this shop before I moved to Portland. I was doing research on stuff in the area that was right by my apartment, and I found this place and was like, wow, I'd really love to work there, and now I do. So it's cool. I mean, I play all the pinball machines back here. I'm pretty okay at them. You know, I've been into comics and that sort of stuff since I was like 6 years old, so definitely.
And how would you define what a geek is?
That's a good question. Primarily, I mean, I guess anybody that's kind of into, like, oh man, any kind of like comics and sci-fi and even horror and stuff, like, you can always kind of tell who's what. It's actually hard to kind of define like geek culture now because it's become such a mainstream sort of thing, you know, with the massive success of the Dark Knight movies and the Avengers and all that stuff. I mean, it's you know, I use quotes, but like regular people are getting into comics and superhero stuff, and we get people coming in, you know, in their 20s and 30s being like, I never read a comic before, but I saw that Avengers movie and that seemed awesome, so what can you recommend? And so we get a lot of new customers just because of that.
Is this a store, a hub for geek culture?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a total hub for it. Like I said, I mean, we have tons of events at the store, and you know, people gather here all the time for different things. When we do the convention, we usually have the after party here, so it's us and a few of our friends, and then all of like our VIP guests. They come and hang out, and all those guys love the store too. Like every comic creator I've brought here has always been like, "Oh my God, this store rules!" And they like can't help but drop a bunch of money on stuff, even though they work in the industry themselves. But yeah, I mean, you know, we get video game people here, we get sci-fi people, horror fans, and we've got a ton of horror masks that people get all excited about. Fangoria magazine we carry. We've got all the pinball machines, so we get those people, and that's got like this big resurgence happening in the United States right now, which is also really cool. So yeah, I mean, we're without a doubt a hub to geek culture.
And I know you had mentioned this earlier, that you got into comics at an early age, like 6. Mm-hmm. How did you get introduced to comics, and how did it, you know, last up until today?
I think I had been watching the cartoons, like the really, really old Superman cartoons and stuff, and that kind of got me started. And then my mom was basically like, you know, there are comics, and I think she was just kind of like encouraging me to read more stuff. And so she started getting me comics, and I, you know, discovered Batman and all this other stuff. I actually read Archie a lot when I was a kid, which I totally don't anymore. But yeah, I started out with like Superman and Batman, and then just kind of went from there. And I mean, as I've gotten older, I think comics have also gotten a little bit more, I don't really want to say sophisticated, but in a lot of ways they have, especially like the independent titles. They deal with a lot of really weird issues and like psychological, crazy thriller drama stuff. There are a lot of different genres now, so it's easy to say that there's probably something for everybody if they just took a minute to kind of figure out what was out there. It's not all just like dudes in spandex punching each other.
Had you always imagined yourself working with comics? And
No, actually I hadn't. I'd always kind of thought about like doing big event planning type stuff, and that's basically what I do now. Is I run our convention, which we got about 1,200 people to our show last year. And we're hoping to make that bigger this year. So it ultimately ended up being a natural fit, just because, you know, comics and old toys and stuff, that was kind of a hobby of mine. And when I realized I could make money being involved with all that stuff and do kind of the stuff that my career was leaning towards, it was just silly not to. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about this convention and how, like for our listeners, how they can get involved with that.
Yeah, it's in November. We do it November 8th, 9th, and 10th. It's Maine's largest comic convention, although it's only our third year. It started out at the Eastland Hotel, right on Congress, well, not really Congress, but right on, High Street. And then last year we were at the Doubletree. That was the year that I took over running the convention. I made it really big. I did all of the planning and stuff and all the organizing myself. And then this year, same thing, it's getting even bigger. We've got really cool guests. We got the creator of Axe Cop, which is that cartoon that's coming out really soon, like I think in the next month or so. He also, of course, created the comic that it's based on. And if people want to get involved, all they have to do is stop by the store and, you know, we could always have people flyering and stuff. I'm actually going to get some one of the artists to design a really cool poster for us this year. So it'll be kind of a collectible. Like I said, we can always use people to flyer and stuff like that. So that would be a big help if anybody wanted to get involved with that.
If people are having more information about this location, can they go on your website or the Facebook page?
Yeah, we have our own website. It's just coastcitycomics.com, and then you can find us on Facebook. It's just type in Coast City Comics. I think we're the only one on there. So, and if you want information on the convention, you can go to coastcitycomiccon.com, and we're also on Facebook with that as well.
Matt Osman and Iris Sangiovanni of Blunt Youth Radio, signing off.
I'm just going to remind you, you are listening to Blunt Youth Radio, and I am Adam Bradstreet.
And I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And we are talking with Julie York and Ryan York, and they are co-founders of PortCon Maine.
And we just listened to a piece that our Blunt members, Matt Osman and Iris Sangiovanni, did with an employee of Coast City Comics. And he was talking about their con in November that they do. And they're saying they're hoping to get more people, but actually that was sort of like a success, really, the first year. And I was wondering if you think that geek culture, do you think geek culture in Maine especially has like really grown over the years and that's why things are starting to be more successful or bigger? Or do you think the success of these smaller cons that have just started is in part because of PortCon and things that started a while ago?
I'll take credit. Why not?
Ryan's gonna. That's a question. So, PortCon starting, right? When we started, nobody knew what we were trying to do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, anime and gaming, what is that, you know? And we used to say things like, oh, it's kind of like a Comic Con or like a Star Trek Con. We used to say that a lot. And a lot of other people would be like, oh, I know what that is, right? Star Trek. I know what Star Trek is. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got this. You know, now all these other conventions are starting up, and people don't even know. Like, Coast City Comics said, you know, that they're the Comic Con for Maine. There's other Comic Cons in Maine, too. Mm-hmm. There's, like, MACAF, Maine Comic Arts Festival, run by Casablanca Comics. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like all the stores, like, we own Weekend Anime. It's almost like all the stores, we have all these cons that we help run. And I think what it is everybody wants to party and everybody wants to celebrate. And I think that after PortCon did it, I wouldn't say that like PortCon, I wouldn't claim credit like my husband will. My husband will just be like, yeah, it's all us. What? We did it. I would say that PortCon kind of opened the door because I know that when Casablanca was thinking about starting MACAF, Casablanca, the owner, Rick, who's right down in Portland, came and talked to us when we were at the Eastland and was like, you know, do you have any ideas? Do you have any suggestions? And, you know, we kind of threw some at him. And it's just because we've already made the mistakes. So it's, you know, like we'll be like, well, here's some ideas of what not to do.
You're the sages of the small main con.
Just be like, here's some ideas that didn't go well.
It is difficult, though, to present a face to the different venues that, you know, that, you know, these are real businesses that are worth having at your venue. And I think a lot of the venues are familiar with us now. So, I mean, it is easy for someone to say, hey, look, they're successful. This is what we want to do. We're doing it in a similar way. And that can certainly help. I'm not actually going to take full credit for that. I mean, these people work hard to be able to run a convention.
It's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing. And there's been people who've started and people who've, you know, I think there's like 10 events now in Maine. Like there's 10 really big ones. We just happen to be the oldest and the biggest in June. Like because we've been around, you know, obviously we were the oldest and we were like the first. And so that's just how that happens to go. Because, I mean, luckily we haven't goofed.
So you mentioned, you mentioned, Ryan, you know, or that people like to party. So why do you think that people are so attracted to geek culture and they're so easily enamored with it?
I think it's just like being enamored with anything else. I mean, it's the same as being into a particular sports team. It's just happens to be you're interested in something different.
I mean, there's a whole town dedicated to baseball in New York. You know that, right? There's a whole town dedicated to baseball. Like, and I mean, you go to Japan. When we went to Japan, there was like, there's a whole town district dedicated to geek. You know, I mean, Akihabara and then the Gundam Cavs and whole town. So like, it's just like any, and I think people are enamored by having fun with other people who like what they like. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Just have a fun weekend, celebrate the stuff you like, nerd out. And I think geeks in general are more likely that when they're together, it gets really exuberant and the energy is just so palpable that I think, you know, of course it's fun to be a geek. You know, you can hang out and if people look at you and think you're weird, they just call you a geek and you're like, yeah, what? Having fun.
So do you think it is a friendly culture? Because I would say, I mean, from personal observances, I would say sports culture is probably not a particularly friendly culture.
Yeah. I think that's from the outside looking in. Because I have the joy of having my husband runs our store, and that means that he works with geeks all day long, right? And I have the joy of having a job outside of geek culture. I'm a teacher. I teach over at South Portland, video, computers, that sort of thing, right? So I have the joy of having several coworkers who aren't geeks. And I have one coworker in particular that I'm thinking of right now who's such a sports nerd, like hardcore sports nerd. Like every hockey game, every basketball game, he's there. He's there, okay? He's the nicest guy ever. But like looking in, I think you might think he's kind of... Do you know what I mean? Because you're on the outside looking in. I think geek culture is friendly if you're a geek, you know, because just like any other culture, looking in, geeks might look at you and be like, you know, it's like Homestuck. Do you know about Homestuck?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a part of it.
Of course
but...
you're not.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that I'm not a Homestuck myself.
You're not a Homestuck. But Homestucks are really great. A great thing because there are Homestuckers and then there are cosplayers and cosplayers be like, oh, I'm not a Homestucker.
Yeah,
you know,
I've
and
seen
it's like,
that. It's
but
strange.
you're both dressing up in cosplay, but I'm not a Homestucker. You know, or like I like comic books. I like American I don't like manga. And it's like, but they're, you know, so I think like cultures, I think any kind of culture can be kind of closed, but I think it is friendly
geeks
once you're in it.
In general, kind of like to fractionalize and say, I'm this type of geek or this type of geek or this type of geek. At our event, we try to encourage everyone to like share.
That's
like,
why
try
we
try to be friendly.
That's
so
why
I,
we were
I think
like.
It's a pretty friendly event.
In 2011, I looked at everybody and I was like, I don't want to call us the Anime and Gaming Convention anymore. And we talked. I think it was 2011 or 2010, and I was like, I really want to change PortCon, and I want to rebrand us. Because I don't want to be just anime and gaming. I want Star Trek people. I love Star Trek. Okay?
He's in a TNG uniform there.
I love Star Trek, especially Next Generation. It's the best one. Right? Right? Oh, my goodness. Captain Picard. Steal my heart. So, I wanted it to be open to everything. And I wanted it to be geeky. So that's when we kind of... I'm going to take credit. That's when we kind of were like, what can we call this? And our chairs sat down. We had 13 different names, and I was like, geek culture. I like that. It sounds like we're a community. It sounds like we're celebrating a culture, not just like one thing. We're celebrating all things that could be considered geek. So if somebody comes in, you know, and they're like, man, I really like Star Wars, and I want to dress up as a stormtrooper this weekend, and then there's somebody else who's like, Kiki's Delivery Service was my favorite anime, you know, they can hang out, and it'd be okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
And it's when we did that a lot of other cons started and we're like, we're going to be the gaming con. We're going to be the anime con. We're going to be the comic con. And we were like, yeah, that's fine. We're going to be the everything con. We might not have a lot of one thing. Like, we might not have a lot of comics, but you saw Deadpools. You saw Spider-Man.
You saw
the Iron, what was it? The Steampunk Avengers. Those were awesome.
Yeah.
You saw the girl, the TARDIS, that hand-painted.
Yes.
Her.
Yeah.
Right? That's right, Doctor Who. I love you too, Doctor Who.
I just want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. It's 780-4909, 780-4909. We would love to hear what your thoughts are on geek culture.
So let's say you really want to just start your own con. There's so many already, but you just want to fraction off, have your own little really specific thing. Any tips for people who are really just trying to start their own little con?
Don't. Find another con and help out. And then if you literally can't do that, then go ahead and start your own.
I would say that's a bit. Work with someone else first. I would say it's good idea. Well, I would say it's a good idea to intern, which is what you guys are doing, right? I would say it's a good idea to get experience at something before you start something, right?
Yeah.
Because then you can say what you like and what you don't like, right? Before we opened up Weekend Anime, we both worked at Crossroad Games. You know what I'm saying? Like, we both worked at Crossroad Games. We both, you know, went there. We loved the shop. And we were like, what could we do that would be different? Because inherently, you don't want multiples of the same thing. Like, inherently... we don't really need 50 port cons in Maine because, well, Maine's only so big and there's only so many months, right? So I would suggest interning, you know, like go to the store you really like or go to the event that you already enjoy. Find out what they do. Find out if you could incorporate yourself within that group, become part of their staff or start your own events in it. And then I would say after having experience, then... If it isn't what you want and you want something different, then I would say go for it. And I would say talk to people in the area who do it because everybody will have advice for you. Everybody will have stories. Everybody will give you things to say. We have 163 staffers, I think, and they will all tell you things to do and not do because they all have experience doing. I mean, some of them, it's their 13th year. Some of them have been doing it for 13 years. So they'll have 13 years of experience, which is helpful. Listening to that is...
There's a lot of smaller events that start up and don't really know what they're getting into, and it's a lot of work.
And you don't want to get credit. You don't want to end up with the bill you can't pay.
Yeah.
And you don't want to end up insulting the people who come. Like, you don't want to end up lying to the community because the community never forgets.
And they're smarter than a lot of people think.
Yeah. I think
do you have experience with it?
I just think, you know, we've known events that have started that say things and, that we're better or, that we're bigger. And
everyone says they're the biggest.
Everyone says that they're the biggest. And if it's come to the, like, we had a vendor this year tell us that since another convention had worked with them, they didn't want to work with us because the other convention didn't have the attendance to support the vendor coming. And the other convention said, oh, we had thousands. And people don't forget. So, like, lying is not the way to start things.
In seriousness, though, if you really love the hobby and you want to start something, that's great.
It's great.
It's just hard. You're going to work at it, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes.
I don't think it would be possible today to start PortCon on a $35 budget.
No.
Like, I don't think if somebody came up to me and was like, hey, Julie, you're going to start a convention with $35 doing bookmarks? You know, that I, like, printed off on my printer and, like, hand-laminated and cut in my kitchen. Like, I don't think anybody would be like, yeah, that's totally possible, Julie. It sounds like fun, right?
Might just set with Kickstarter or something.
Right, Kickstarter. Like, I'd see these things on Kickstarter, and I'm like, oh, my God, like, Coast City last year, they did a Kickstarter and they got like $10,000 off of it. I'm like, dude, $10,000? I would have I don't know, like, gone to Dairy Queen and gotten like a blizzard and been like, I've reached the high life. Woo! You know? I don't even know what we would have done with $10,000. We would have just rolled over in it in the bed and been like Scrooge McDuck. I don't know. This blows my mind.
Well, so geek culture as a full-time hobby and career, good?
Oh, yes, definitely overall. Get into geek culture as a hobby, but start with a store or just get in
as a lower, career, lower sweetie.
Than a, lower than oh as a career oh never mind it's not a career
as a career. Did I mention I have a job teaching?
Yeah.
Did I mention that prior? I would say as a career, because I have students who ask me this all the time. I would say as a career, it's hard, and it depends on how much you want for your own life. Like, I have insurance through my job. And I would say as a career, you can find places. Starting up your own convention or your own store is hard. If you ask any store owner in the area, if you were like, hey, if I started up my own store, would that be a good idea? They'll probably look at you like they've been through some sort of trauma and be like, don't do it. it's worth it.
There's definitely better ways to make money.
It's worth it, and it's really fun. And we know a lot of people, and we have a lot of communities, thanks to our store and the convention. I know tons of people.
We've been speaking with
Julie York and Ryan York. This has been Blunt Youth Radio. Now for a break.
Guy that does tattoos, and I hit him up and I got one right on my neck. That was an impulsive decision on my part.
Must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plowmen dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it is worth.
And now, the weather. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms likely in the evening, then showers likely after midnight. Patchy fog. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall in the evening. Locally heavy rainfall possible in the evening. Lows in the lower 60s, light and variable winds. Chance of rain, 70%. And Tuesday, patchy fog in the morning, cloudy with a 50% chance of showers, humid with highs in the mid-70s, light and variable winds. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, lows in the lower 60s, light and variable winds. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, humid with highs in the mid-70s, again, light and variable winds. Chance of rain, 50%. You are listening to WMPG and W281AC, Gorham, Portland.
Hello, and welcome back to Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Adam Bradstreet.
And on our last half, we were speaking with Julie and Ryan York, who are co-founders of PortCon Maine. And now we're going to be speaking to Stu Tinker,
who does Stephen King tours of Maine. He goes around and does car tours of
areas in Bangor.
So welcome, Stu.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, so how long, for one, have you been a fan of Stephen King's writing?
Well, we started fan in 1974 when Carrie first came out. That was Steve's first book. He did a book signing for Betts Bookstore, which was downtown Bangor at the time. It was the second signing he ever did. The first one was the day before at the University of Maine in Orono. And we went and bought the book and absolutely loved it, both my wife and I, and we've been fans ever since.
Cool. How do you think Stephen King growing up and living in Maine affected his writing?
Well, it's hard to say. Everybody asks, you know, why did he become so popular? I don't know what the answer is to that. He writes about common things. He writes about things that everybody can associate with, and he's got a very homey style of writing.
Yeah.
So you were a fan of the book. So you, when did you start your business, and why did you start it?
Well, we actually ended up buying Betts Bookstore in 1990, and we ran it until 2009, and I sold it to one of my customers. And at that point, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I took about a year, and I had done Stephen King tours before over the past 20 years for individual groups and some journalists that had come up. And I just got thinking that it might be a fun thing to do. And it's been 3.5 years now, and it's so busy, I'm looking at buying a bigger van now. So,
so what has the reaction been to your tours?
Fantastic. It's just amazing. Most people don't realize how much business Steve brings into this area. You know, I do because I lived it for 20 years, and it's continuing now. There really isn't a strong draw in Bangor, except for Steve and the Waterfront Concert Series, basically.
Yeah.
You stop at Steve's house, and while we're there, there'll be 5-6 other cars pull up. Fans get out, take pictures of the house, and they go. And it's just continuous day after day after day. You know, his popularity is just worldwide. It's amazing.
We did have, we were talking about, you know, writing your intro for the show, and we had some other people talking about how when they mention that they're from Maine, when they're out of state, and Maine is actually not really well known, I think, but they'll be like, is that where the lobster is and Stephen King is? And a lot of people have said they've experienced that. So do you really think that it's that the writing has his writing has brought more to Maine and made it a more well-known state, really?
Oh, absolutely. Last year I had 3 separate couples come from Russia, and they only came to Bangor because of Steve.
Wow.
One of them flew in from New York, and I picked them up at the Bangor Airport. We did the tour. I took them back, and they flew back to New York. The second couple drove up from Boston, did the tour with me, spent the night, and drove back again the next day. No other reason for them to come. And the third one actually came up and spent the better part of a week here on vacation, and only because they were King fans. Other than that, they knew nothing about Maine.
So has any of his writing has any of Stephen King's writing changed anything about Maine for you?
No, not really. I still look at it as home. I've been here all my life, especially in Bangor. So, you know, when he writes about Derry, Maine, he's writing about Bangor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some of the stuff is literally the building next door to me. It kind of makes it a little spooky in some ways, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
So is doing these tours, has this become a full-time job for you?
Yeah, right now it's 7 days a week. I do probably an average of 10 people on each time. It's amazing. I've unfortunately, this week I've had to turn away some people because I just couldn't fit them in. I just don't have enough time in the day to do it. Each tour, I say, takes 3 hours, but they're actually running about 3.5 because the weather is a little better. People want to hang around and take pictures longer.
So you mentioned that you had some Russian fans that just flew in from New York to go on this tour and because they were fans. So do you have like a brief good story? About a fan or something you've experienced while doing this?
Well, every tour is a little different. Everybody has a different favorite book and has different questions. Couple have stood out, and one in particular, the guy had met his girlfriend at a Stephen King signing in Connecticut, and had started dating. They'd been dating, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. He brought her up here to do the tour, which was a surprise tour, and she was thrilled. I mean, we started out just having a great time, but what she didn't know is he brought her up here to propose to her, and he did it right in front of Steve's house. And that was probably the most unique tour that I've had so far.
That's cool. Do you think Stephen King knows about you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steve was very supportive with the bookstore. Truthfully, if it hadn't been for Steve and Tabby, we wouldn't have made it in business the first 2 years. He just went out of his way to help us. He started doing signings again, which he hadn't done for a long time. He sold me books. He bought books from me. I just owe so much to him from just getting the store back on its feet when we first bought it. And this has just been a natural spinoff. So.
It's very cool.
It's very cool. And that's a major part of geek culture. Thank you very much for being on the show and for talking to us about this.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, hopefully King fans will work their way to Bangor at some point and look us up.
Yes. All right. Thanks for being on the show.
Bye. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
So there's a major part, I think, of Maine's geek culture for you.
Yeah.
And it's a major part of our culture outside of the state.
Yeah.
So it was fun to hear from him. So with us now are...
Abby Davenport and Kevin Muskie. They are from the SCA, or...
the Society for Creative Anachronisms, yeah. And they're representing... them for us today. So for those who don't know, can you just explain what the SCA is?
Well, the SCA is a group of people that hope to study and practice medieval culture and bring it into, in some ways, their everyday life. We have every activity from the martial arts and getting dressed up in armor and fighting in large groups and in single sort of tournament fashion to the arts and sciences. I'm an illuminator, so I make and try to recreate medieval illuminated manuscripts.
Hmm.
And cool. We've got, what do we have?
Oh, we everything. You name it. If someone was doing it in the period, we have someone recreating it. Animal husbandry, fabric making. Mm-hmm. We have people who make the most exquisite clothing you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, gowns and doublets and just stuff that's beautiful.
Building catapults and brewing beers and mm-hmm. wines and meads. A lot of mead.
There are experts in period miniatures. People don't realize they didn't have little locket pictures, mm-hmm. but they did have something like it where they actually had a painter mm-hmm. who would paint your beloved's image in a and we have people who recreate that art, and they're well known internationally for doing so.
And the music and the bardic arts, acting, all sorts
of things. So what time period exactly is it?
There isn't a set time period. Okay.
There's a range.
There's a range. Officially, it's pre-1600 to about the fall of the Roman Empire. Right in those time frames.
It's a long time.
Right, but
to get creative with. So you have
all over the world, too?
Mostly Europe. I mean, potentially, you know.
Officially.
Yeah, officially it's Europe. But people have gone outside and it's grown. And I think personally, and this is just my personal opinion, that the SEA should grow. And where your interest lies and where you take you, we support that. So you have people who are doing...
Mongolian, Japanese, Russian...
South Asian and all.
We have one gentleman from out west, I believe, who in the real world is a archaeologist, and he creates a jaguar warrior, you know, an Aztec jaguar warrior. Falls just inside a period. And he's out there, you know, when he's out fighting, he's got his stuff looking like an Aztec. It's like, all right.
All right.
He's good, too.
Yeah.
So is this something that, is this a full-time thing, a daily thing, is it a weekend, or what is,
you know, it's as much as you want to be involved. You can, the big thing is it's a community of people, and that's what keeps people involved. It can be as little as just go to a few events a year, and I gear up for those things, and I enjoy myself at that time, or you have a... almost daily interaction with your community. And for me, that's what feeds me. I love that part. I love, you know, like-minded people who are interested and excited about the same things and learning and, you know, creative. This, some of the most creative people I've ever met.
Yeah,
so
if you've got time to burn and more money than is, you know, seemly, that you could do something every weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Go, and there's literally something almost every night to do if you really wanted.
Locally, we are very busy. We have...
Personally don't have that kind of energy.
We have medieval dancing we do. There is a band that practices with medieval instruments. We have archery. We have... the fighting. We have craft nights where people get together and work on their stuff. And we have, what else? Our general arts and sciences. We do painting classes and all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's plenty to do in just the immediate area, but then you could go the East Kingdom, which we are part of. A small part of the East Kingdom reigns from Delaware, sort of the tip of Delaware, up into Canada. So it's huge. And that's just our portion.
Okay,
worldwide.
So that's how the East Kingdom. So there's different branches, and they're each kingdoms, and then within those kingdoms there's a state, and then your specific area.
Yeah, well, we're cut at southern Maine is where Malagentia sort of lies, and so we bring in folk from that area. Although we do have people come from outside of the area who like to play with us, but then when you get outside of our immediate area, there are other groups too. So.
So this is going to be a really noob question.
Oh, yeah.
But
bring it on.
What is the difference? Because I know that when you're part of the SEA, it seems like you have like a name and a sort of persona.
Exactly.
So what is the difference between role-playing, LARPing, and being part of the SEA?
Well, as someone who does a bit of role-playing, a bit of LARP, and the SEA, the difference is... I'm creating a persona in the SCA. I'm not sort of living that. There's no theater there. There's no overarching plot. There's no, you know, making it up as I go along. There's quite literally, it's just doing what I choose to do on any given day. Learning what I need to learn. Learning about the person my persona would have been.
Persona is a good guide. It's a way of developing your interests. So if you kind of don't know which way to turn for your clothing, you can pick an area of the world that you like and develop your persona that is, well, I think I look good in these clothes. And so I'm going to focus on this area of the world at this time period so that I can develop that. people can have multiple personas over their mm-hmm. lifetime.
Yeah.
So, and, or, I should say season, because right now I'm not really interested in being 1400s Germany. It's a little hot. But, so it's just a way of focusing your interests and giving you a guide. And some people are very serious about it. Some people are focused, and it is in some ways a character that they put on. But that's not, I would say, the overall atmosphere.
It's more of you do your thing. Mm-hmm. Are you referred to as a specific name or mm-hmm. the specific title, but otherwise you are basically yourself?
Yeah, basically. Okay. You might afford somebody a different kind of courtesy mm-hmm. than you would normally if, like, you worked with them because mm-hmm. they're your coworker.
Yeah.
But then in this venue, they have earned certain accolades that allow them maybe a different kind of courtesy. But it's a good practice for, it's just good manners.
You know? Well, we do. We focus on the chivalric ideal.
Yeah, the best
honor,
parts.
Duty, courtesy, temperance. All those basic things that people kind of say are a thing of the past. Well, we try and hang on to those a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good parts. Yeah. You know, we focus on the good stuff. We're not interested in recreating the plague.
Mm, no. Not so much. I imagine
or, you know, women's impression. No thanks. Dysentery.
No, dysentery.
This is the reimagined progressive version.
Yes. We'll call it that, sure. Yeah.
So how can Iris, no, how can Iris get involved? How can the average listener get involved? Do you have to, like, go through steps? Like, do you have to build, like, unlock achievements in the real world, or?
Well, there's, depending on what your goals are, and there are goals you can attain. We just want people to come play, and first and foremost, you start in the society and you get to know people and you find out what your interests are. And then the people around you will say, you should talk to this person. They know everything about that. And you learn from them or you learn from around or you study yourself and bring yourself up. And then the community will recognize you. The first level, which we call an award of arms, is a thank you for coming and playing with us.
Yeah.
Please, you know, thank you for being a part of our community. We want to acknowledge that you are here and you are a member of our world, and thanks. And then as you kind of move forward, it's about, look at how you focused and learned and developed, and you're a leader, or you do service and all these mm-hmm. things. You're an excellent fighter and you teach other people. You can get this award is, and it's all about recognizing people. I don't think there's enough of that in the world generally. So we hold our friends up and we say, you're awesome. Mm-hmm. And they go, thanks. Yeah,
they quite literally get called up into court in front of everybody and, you know, you've been doing a good job. You know, in the modern world, you get a lot of very quiet, oh yeah, hey, we're giving you this bonus, but don't tell anyone.
Don't tell them any. Oh, yeah. Now we're like, and you get a hat.
Yeah. No. Everyone needs to know. You're doing great.
So,
if you want to get involved, you asked that question. I kind of went over somewhere else.
So if you want to get involved, you just look it up.
You can find your local group online. Mm-hmm. And the eastkingdom.org, which is, will show you all regions for the East Kingdom, will mm-hmm. also show you the regions for Maine. So if you're not just in southern Maine, there are other groups around.
Mm-hmm.
And you can contact their local chatelaine, who I'm the local chatelaine from Alagentia. And they can, and usually there's a website or other information that'll say, this is what's happening in your area at any given time. Show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We love it. We had somebody show up to an event I run twice a year, which is a tavern, who just saw the signs on the side of the road, pulled off into the parking mm-hmm. lot, came in and was like, oh, I've been looking for you guys. And she went home, got changed, came back and had a great time. And you know, that's what we want. We want people just to come find us, and we're here with open arms.
And cool. Locally, I mean, there's the website, mm-hmm. the overarching East Kingdom site, where you can put in your local zip code and it'll find you the closest group to you. And here's the contact person.
Mm-hmm.
But locally, just, you know, because we're on this radio station mm-hmm. here at USM, we work through the local student organization, the USM Blade Society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Blade Society has practices every Tuesday on from 6 to 9 p.m. During the summer, we're out on the quad, out here in front of the Muskie Building and the Law Library. And during the winter, from those same hours, we're in the Sullivan Gym. Mm-hmm. And come on out. Even while we're doing fighting those nights or fencing, if that's not your thing, don't worry. Come on by. Meet people. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. We'll point you at the right person. Mm-hmm. You go, I want to do painting. I want to do the illuminated manuscripts. Well, we have just the person for that.
And a part of this is that you are building real
You're
skills.
Doing stuff. Yes. Yes. Okay.
If you want to survive That's the cool. apocalypse,
come
it's
talk.
Us.
Yeah.
Hang out, go find the SCA.
Practical skills.
Practical skills.
Yeah. How do you make cloth? Gee. How do you shear a sheep? Yes. Never tried that.
There's also, just basic farming. This yes. also gets yeah. you that information.
Oh,
but
yeah. Some of it. Yeah.
Now, do you consider the SCA a part of geek culture?
I would. Well, I would absolutely. I'd say, well, it's a community of people, of like-minded individuals that are doing something that's maybe outside of the mainstream. Mm-hmm. So there's certainly a place for it there, I
yeah.
would think.
Yeah.
I
Yeah, absolutely. And we get a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, mm-hmm. I have my SCA persona, but I also do a little LARPing and role-playing, mm-hmm. and I'm involved, I like sci-fi, and, my stuff tends to be more the hard sci-fi stuff, but hey, whatever. whatever floats your boat.
You get a lot of crossover with, the Ren Faire culture, which mm-hmm. is its own culture on its
yeah.
own.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then
yeah.
you're going to kind of find people who are maybe want something different or grow out of that or... it's a good place for Ren culture who want to actually not...
Learn something.
Yeah, or they... Or, no, I...
Yeah, that's a little hard.
No, Ren culture that wants to focus on something. And it's... I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of crossover.
Yeah, it's we tend to be a lot more practical than Ren Faire. Ren Faire tends to involve a lot more theater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot more fantasy, too, yeah. mm-hmm. in there. But that's not...
Now, what got you into the SCA?
I had some friends of mine that I had met, and they kept saying, "You got to come to this event. You got to come to this event. It's in Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, and there's 14,000 of us." And I was at the time kind of at loose ends, and I thought, "I'm going to go have an adventure." And I showed up, and I drove by this sea of canvas tents, and I thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? and it's never been the same since. It's like 14,000 of people who are just like you. And I met lifelong friends
that's great. Yeah.
That day, and then found my local group after. I mean, Penzic is not recommended as your first event, but it was for me. So. We have an event coming up this weekend, actually, Saturday, Hebron, Maine.
Yeah, just outside of Mechanics Falls, mm-hmm. so it's not very, very far away. People want to just show up for the day, they can do that. We ask is that they make an attempt at, pre-1600s clothing. But if you don't got that, if you don't have it, we can help out with that to some degree.
So how can people... So where can they find exact information to get to this? Their locals?
It's Great Northeastern War. Just do a Google search on Great Northeastern War. That's